How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
All right, welcome everybody to Locked On Lakers. I'm your host, Harrison Fagan. Anthony Irwin, my normal co-host, is not with me tonight. After he locked me out of that last interview, I changed the Skype password on his laptop so that he couldn't get back into it because I'm just really tired of him locking me out of interviews. So I'm actually here to interview someone else, but before we get to that, I wanted to remind you that, as always, you can find our full shows on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Use the promo code LOLAKERS to get a $20 rebate on your first ticketing purchase. Now, with all that out of the way, I have the pleasure of bringing on my favorite video breakdown guy and now new podcaster, Pete Zayas of Laker Film Room. How's it going, Coach?
Doing well, Harrison. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm hanging in there. We're recording this late on a Sunday night. You're a late change in for Anthony, so we appreciate that. And honestly, I think it kind of improves the podcast. So I'm glad you were able to make it work. And because, I mean, really, it's perfect timing because you just came out, I think literally hours ago, as of the time that we're recording, an interview or a video on why Brandon Ingram was able to be so effective against the Cleveland Cavaliers. He almost became the youngest player to ever record a triple-double over the weekend. So I guess first question would be, what did you think he did best in that game?
For me, it was his playmaking. That was something that really stood out to me. You know, that was his season high in assists by a considerable margin, and he was really good in transition. His early offense, his look aheads, he hit Nick Young, I think, for three assists. You know, three of Young's threes were assists from Ingram in transition. Just getting the team out in the open, that was especially with Russell out, that starting unit needed to run, and they needed to run a lot. I don't remember what the final numbers were, but they were, you know, something like 1.5 points per possession at halftime in transition, and like 0.8 points per possession in half court sets. So it was something that he was really instrumental in, the frequency in which they got early looks. So that's what I thought he did very well. And then he's continued to defensive rebound very well. He's drops down from a perimeter position, kind of, you know, sandwiches down onto the bigs, and he's done a great job of getting rebounds at the top of his jump and utilizing his length to secure the rebounds, oftentimes with both hands.
I agree with you. I think he did a great job of just making the simple passes, whether it was in the half court or in transition, like you noted. He wasn't doing anything fancy, like coming out of a pick and roll and finding a guy with a no-look across the lane or something like that that you expect from your typical, you know, superstar point guard, whatever. It was just he was making his reads, and he was hitting guys like right in their shooting pocket, and Nick Young was red hot, and he was able to get him going a little bit. And the one play when I was watching the game this morning for a kind of a breakdown that I was doing that really stood out to me was towards the end of the game when he faced up, I think it was against J.R. Smith, and he drove baseline and hit Nick Young with a bounce pass, and he passed Nick Young open with a bounce pass in the corner, and Nick Young ended up missing the three. But Ingram went up, he got fully boxed out by Kevin Love, still managed to corral the rebound, and then kick it back out immediately to Clarkson, who then found Young for a corner three that he made. And I just thought, that I wrote about this, and I just thought that was kind of the one play that really show it was kind of all of the things he's doing well right now, all in one little sequence.
Yeah, that was a play. That's a set play. So they posted him up three times in that game, and two were at the beginning of the first and third quarter against Kyrie Irving, and it didn't go that well for him. But that particular play was, I believe, out of a timeout or a sideline play. And that's a play called Hammer, where Nance will set a back screen for Young, and Young fades into the corner on that. Now, Nance set an excellent screen, but Ingram's part of that was he hit him right on time and right in his shot pocket with a bounce pass on the move. And that's a really advanced pass to make for his age. You know, all the timing and everything that went into it, that was a really impressive play. And that was something that he consistently had really good velocity and accuracy on his passes. And that's something that I look for, because it's one thing to get the ball to the open guy, but if you're able to put some zip on it and hit him right in the shot pocket, that, you know, that creates that extra degree of space that prevents the defender from closing out in a timely manner. So he's a lot more open. And so, yeah, that play is a great example of that.
Is that something that you think that you're starting to see him do more as kind of the season's gone on? Just kind of have his passes gotten better? Is that why the assist numbers are going up, or are guys, you know, I guess they haven't necessarily been hot over a losing streak, but are you seeing more of that, or was it more just this game?
This game was more anomalous, in my opinion. I've actually liked his passing throughout the season, but I think he's been more, over the last couple of games, it's been more of an attack with his passes as opposed to, initiation type passes, right? Where, you know, previously he'd been just kind of bringing the ball up court and, you know, moving the ball to start the play. And then when he'd get the ball back, there wasn't a degree of aggression with his passes. And that's something that it's only been over a couple of games, so I'm a little hesitant to say, oh yeah, he's really improved and it's a permanent thing. But that's something that I'm definitely have my eye on him going forward over the next couple of games, is he continuing to really attack and penetrate the defense with his passes.
Yeah, and he probably would have had that triple-double if Timofey Mozgov had made that dunk, I think, as a couple Lakers pointed out after the game. And then he only ended up with 9 points, which has been kind of a thing this year. That's something that people are talking about. It's, you know, they're asking the question, can he score? And I think it's a little early to be asking that of a 19-year-old that has yet to reach his full potential. But, you know, scoring 9 points and falling short of a triple-double in that way, that's not normally the way that players fall, kind of miss out on that triple-double, is the scoring. Usually it's one of the other two categories. And how have you seen his progression as a scorer going?
It's been slow, and it's been something that I've been cautioning anyone who'll listen about his scoring from the preseason. He obviously has some great attributes in that he has a lot of length, and his length relative to his height drew a lot of Kevin Durant comparisons. And I've been, again, screaming from the mountaintops for a while now that that's not the player that he is, and that's not the player that he was going to be.
I really messed up on that question. I should have asked you, so why isn't he Kevin Durant yet?
Yeah, no, he never was. And just because he has really long arms and he's 6'9" doesn't mean that that he's Kevin Durant, you know. And it's something that he is – I expect to see a big boost in his scoring potential next year. I think he's going to make very small incremental improvements as a scorer, but he's just missing too many components, necessary components of his skill set in order to be a prime time scorer right now. So a couple of examples. He will he'll 1-2 step into every shot that he takes, meaning that he will go left, right, shoot, and he doesn't really have a hop in his arsenal. Every once in a while he'll catch the ball on a hop, but that's a good way of getting a shooter's legs underneath him, and guys tend to shoot a little better when they do that. His shot form is a little bit of a two-part catapult type of form, and that's something that hurts him on open shots, right? He also lacks some of the footwork necessary to get by guys, and defenders are starting to actually give him quite a bit of space because they're not afraid of his jumper. So it's something that, I mean, again, it's not something that bothers me. It's not something that surprised me. I've been really cautioning against it with him. But my expectation, I've heard some people say, yeah, after the All-Star break, right, he's going to be a 15-point-per-game guy. You know, I'd be shocked if he made that sort of leap over the course of this season. He really needs a summer with a skills trainer to correct and refine a lot of what he has. I think he'll get there eventually, but I just don't think there's a short road ahead of him.
The interesting thing for me watching him this year, and especially during the game on Saturday against the Cavs, was that for all of kind of the talk of him having the ball in his hands and being the point guard, being the playmaker, whatever, you know, Luke's talked that up a lot. He's gotten a lot of questions about it. I think he was a lot better off the ball, at least as a scorer. He was having a lot more effectiveness cutting to the basket. He had that alley-oop to start the game, and then he ended up getting a layup out of, I believe it was a backdoor cut, and I think Lou Williams hit him, if I remember correctly. And then he had the one spot-up three, but for the most part, he's not really creating his own shots right now. And I think it kind of goes to what you said, of defenders aren't really, that's probably why defenders aren't scared of getting blown by him.
Well, that's not really why he was drafted in the first place. If you watched him at Duke, they ran a lot of horns action, and he really played a lot of power forward for them.
Yeah.
He was on the elbow. He was the guy setting screens rather than receiving them. And he'd get put in positions where he'd catch the ball in triple threat position, and meaning that he'd still have his dribble alive, right? So he'd be able to use jab steps and rip throughs and pump fakes and things like that to beat guys off of the dribble in that manner. But he's having to do it now with a live dribble, which is a completely different skill set. And it's just not – I mean, if you want him to be that prime type of scorer, you're going to have to put him in more positions like you're describing, right, where he's cutting off of the ball, which he did much better job of in this past game, or spotting up, which he needs to do a better job of knocking down those open shots, catching the ball in the mid post 15 feet away and, you know, using reverse pivots and jab steps and all that. If you want to maximize his scoring potential, that's the route that he's going to go. But that isn't what Luke's chosen to do with him.
Yeah, no, and I think that it's kind of justifiable, right? These Lakers have a lot of mouths to feed, and I think if he can kind of work on all of that other stuff, it's going to help him if they ever do try and transition him into kind of a more of a go-to role, or even if it's as the primary secondary option behind Russell, who will probably, if the Lakers core grows as I think we all expect, will end up being the number one option most of the time. But I think all of this kind of secondary stuff, learning how to cut, learning the timing on all of that stuff, learning to use his length to make himself a giant target for lob passes, I think all of that is going to help him a lot more than necessarily just sending him out there and isolating him as a 19-year-old.
Right, certainly. And that's something that I would like to see. Everything you described there, I'd like to see them do that more. I haven't loved the Ingram as a point guard experiment, in part because on a lot of possessions, especially with that second unit, the second unit makes fewer passes than the first unit does. And that's okay, because it's very – you got two guards in Lou Williams and Jordan Clarkson.
I was going to say, any lineup with those two guys is going to make a few less passes.
And you know what? But also the action that they run a lot fewer set plays. It's with them, it's really like, all right, set a drag screen and go. You know, it's not, you know – work the ball around the perimeter for the open shot. Like they purposefully play differently with that group. That's even outside of the natural inclinations that those guys have to not necessarily move the ball. All of the action that they run, it's really simple early offense. It's almost like a Mike D'Antoni team where it's, you know, there's actually not a whole lot of ball movement, but it's very spacing focused and attacking early in the shot clock. And Ingram can get lost in that sort of style of play where, you know, he'll bring the ball up court and get the ball to Lou Williams and go stand in a corner, and he's not really involved in the play the rest of the way. So I actually like seeing him with the starters in the manner that he was used, because that group tends to be more conducive to the style of play that he's good at.
Yeah, and I guess Lou Alding has had a little bit of a resurgence here, but I would imagine that – you know, later in the year, maybe they shut him down, you know, and they start kind of playing for next year. You know, if they fall out of the playoff race and we start to see Ingram with those starters a little bit more, or Luke gets a little bit more flexible, because he's very much liked having his five-man rotations when the team is healthy. And maybe if they get back a little bit closer to health, he starts mixing up those groups even a little bit more and trying to get Ingram some of that time with the starters.
Yeah, he very well could, and I could see that more toward the end of the year. But to your point of about Luke's affinity for those five-man groups, I think that, you know, the starting group, when everybody's healthy, is they're a plus 4.1, I think, per 100 possessions. And then that bench lineup is in the 8 or 9 range, last I checked. And then so those two lineups are actually very good lineups. It's rare to have two separate lineups with that are that far above, you know, the zero net rating. But the problem has been every other, all of the Frankenstein lineups, as I call them, right, where it's a mix of the starters and the bench as you transition from one unit to the other, that have been, those by and large have been really bad. So what I think we might see more of is, you know, Luke trying different combinations within that. And I think Ingram will be well served to be an earlier substitution and more with those with that starting unit than he is with Clarkson and Lou Williams.
Okay, so first of all, you almost exactly nailed the net ratings of those two lineups, which is a little freaky if you didn't have the numbers in front of you. The starters are plus 4.6 per 100 possessions, and the bench is plus 8.9. And then the Lakers' next three most used lineups are all pluses in terms of net ratings. So the next one is a 21, that's Clarkson, Dang, Ingram, Nance Jr., and Williams. And then the next one is Clarkson, Ingram, Nance Jr., Robinson, Williams, that's a plus 7.7. The third one that I just read before that is a plus 21, and then there's a plus 6.8. But then to your point of the Frankenstein lineups not going so well, the ones after the next three, no, actually the next four after that are double digits and minuses. They're negative 27.1, negative 25.3, negative 20.4, and negative 44.5. So basically that last one, the negative 44.5, Clarkson, Dang, Ingram, Mozgov, and Randall, I think maybe that group should like never play together again.
Yeah, no, there's a couple, and even in the positive ones that you mentioned, I think a couple of those are just, you know, Tarik Black's injured, so we have to run a slightly different bench unit, right? But it's kind of different version of the same, you know, really strong bench lineup that they've had.
And then Randall or Robinson in place of Black.
Right, exactly. And so that's something that, you know, that like you said, those Frankenstein type lineups, after those established lineups, after you get past those, it gets really ugly really quickly. So, you know, that I think Luke's still playing with it, and I think it's something that, as you can see by the number of minutes that each of the top couple of groups play, he really places a great deal of value on that. But I don't think
the top two are the starters have played 229 minutes together, and that bench unit of death or whatever, the Energizer Bunnies, whatever we're deciding to call it, has gotten 193 minutes, and then the next closest is 53. Right. So it's not a super even. He's really wanted to stick with those five man lineups.
Yeah, for sure. And so, but the transition from one to the other, that's really his next challenge. And I think that once he gets, you know, Tarik Black all the way back into the fold, and really I'm curious to see what he does with that, because one thing that's interesting in the numbers that you just pointed out was that Black was easily replaced by a Robinson or a Randall, and does he continue, does Black fall out of the rotation? Are they just waiting for his ankle to get 100%? I'm curious to see what he does with that, because one thing that I would like to see more of, and putting Randall at that spot helps do that.
I was about to say the same thing. I really want to see more of the Randall-Nance front court, and the fact that lineup has both of them and is still positive is good.
Yeah, that's where I was going with that, is Larry Nance needs more minutes, and he's a high 20s player, in my opinion, in terms of minutes per game. And that's something that if they want to up Larry Nance's minutes, Tarik Black's probably going to be the guy who sacrifices.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But so getting back to Ingram really quickly before we move on to another topic, you know, the thing that struck me about your video, and everybody should go watch it on YouTube. It's just people can just search Laker Film Room and all your stuff will come up, right? I'm subscribed, so I don't even.
Yeah.
So everybody should be subscribed and watching those. But you said at the end of your recent video on Ingram that you felt like Saturday was really replicable for him.
Yeah.
And why do you feel like that is?
Well, I mean, the points, like we said, I don't see him being a big time scorer, and he wasn't a big time scorer against the Cavs, but his ability to pass the ball ahead in transition, he doesn't need to be playing point guard to do that. That's something that that was an extra degree of aggression that I saw from him that you wouldn't normally categorize as aggression necessarily, but I do. It's a way of penetrating and attacking the defense. And so he can totally do that again from whatever position he's playing from. And he's rebounded, especially on the defensive end, really well throughout the year. So that's something that, given the requisite minutes, that's something that I don't have any worry about. He can continue to do that. So I think he's a guy who can get, you know, 5+ assists on a fairly regular basis with the occasional 9 or 10 type of assist game. And then if, you know, so long as you have that expectation that his scoring is going to be probably hovering around that 10 area, you know, for most of the rest of the year, he can get close to those triple digit numbers in all three of those categories, you know, fairly easily within the flow of what he does.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot here. He almost became the youngest player to get a triple-double. Do you think that he does it by the end of the year?
I'm going to say no, because I don't think he's going to get the minutes. I don't remember how many minutes he got last night, but I know he sat for, I think, 90 seconds in the second half. I'm pretty sure he was in the high 30s, and I don't think that's going to happen as guys get healthier. So I'm going to say no, but I think he flirts with it a couple more times.
You guessed high 30s. He actually played 40 minutes and 48 seconds last night. So, or on Saturday against the Cavs. So that's one of those things. That's kind of been Luke's go-to when these guys are out, is he just rides Ingram. He plays him a lot of minutes, which is, it's crazy that the rookie has become his go-to guy for a bunch of run if people are out, just to help him keep lineups consistently.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks to Ingram's positional versatility, right? His ability to – and that's something that, you know, that's going to pay huge dividends going forward. What, you know, one thing that I didn't properly touch on in his assists is just quick ball reversals, right? Just quick, you know, someone makes that pass to me and I already know that the next guy's open. So the ball's in my hand for just a fraction of a second before it moves to that open guy.
He was excellent at that last night.
Yeah, he made three, and there were two toward the end of the game where, like, Nick Young was open and he didn't realize how open he was. So he took a dribble and he took a harder shot than he would have if he just caught it and shot it. And then Clarkson on, like, the very next play did the same thing, you know. And that's a trait that, as the Lakers get more sophisticated and more comfortable within their offense, that's something you see out of Golden State a lot, right, is that pass, oh, crap, Kevin Durant is wide open and there's no one within 10 feet of him, right? Guys who do that naturally and who have a feel for that, they're going to become more and more important as the Lakers get better within this offense.
Yeah, I agree. And I think another one of the – you mentioned Clarkson, and so that kind of brings us naturally into – I wanted to talk a little bit about him. So Mark Medina of the SoCal News Group, this piece that he wrote was for the Orange County Register. Luke Walton has talked about that he wants Clarkson to, I guess, up his playmaking or find a better mix between scoring and playmaking, you know, going forward this season. And – I thought it was interesting that Luke specifically mentioned going back and watching the last 10 games of Clarkson's rookie year to kind of look for tips on how he could start to help him get back more towards that, where even though he was kind of a go-to guy, he was definitely looking to pass more. So I wanted to ask you, Pete, what do you feel like has changed with Clarkson from his rookie year to now, to where he's just like his assist rate has kind of dropped off a cliff? If you look at I have the numbers here, but go ahead and answer the question and I'll pull those up.
Yeah, no, there are a few things. The first thing that stands out to me is actually the surrounding talent. for a good portion of the end of his rookie year. You know, he was surrounded by guys like Wayne Ellington and Wesley Johnson. I think Jordan Hill was still on that team. Ed Davis. Yeah, guys like that. That there was not a secondary ball handler, right? So it was a very – and then within Byron Scott's style of play, there's a lot of high ball screens right in the middle of the court. And those tend to be more – assist conducive for the point guard. And whereas what Luke does, he doesn't do a whole lot of high ball screens right in the middle of the court. There are a lot of ball screens, but they're usually either in the slot, which is right off of the lane line. If you drew like an imaginary line of the free throw line, of the lane line going all the way up court, it's, you know, just off of that is where the slot is, or from the wing for side pick and roll type stuff. So there are fewer high ball screens right in the middle of the court than there were. And then he was the only ball handler in those situations. And I just, if you look at his touches, if you go to NBA.com and kind of go through the old box scores, he was in like the high 80s on a pretty regular basis. And it's just, that's not going to happen next to guys like Lou Williams or the minutes that he gets with D'Angelo Russell. There are just too many other ball handlers for him to get that many touches. So I don't know. I don't have a great deal of optimism of him getting back to that. Although I do think he can improve quite a bit.
So during his rookie year, or the last 10 games that he played in of his rookie year, he assisted on 33.8% of his teammates' field goals, and that's 12.6% this season. So Right. It's a pretty big, there's a pretty big difference there, even though his usage rate is actually not even a full percentage point, just 0.8 it higher during that rookie year. But I guess it goes to like you're talking about, it's not necessarily that he's using less possessions. It's just the way he's using them.
Yeah. He's, you know, one thing that I think would benefit him considerably is he's taking a lot of difficult shots, right? Where he's shooting step backs or shooting, you know, jumpers on the move, that, you know, I don't know. It's really reduced his efficiency, and they're the type of shots that I kind of wonder, you watch Kobe taking a lot of those shots for the last couple of years.
His little two dribbles in and then a little step back or a fade
step
away
back
or
yeah. he'll sidestep, and really those are low percentage shots, you know, for most of the players that have ever played in the NBA. There was a time where Kobe was hitting those, you know, in the mid to high 40s, which is just, I can't tell you how ridiculous it is, because there are so many moving parts from a fundamental standpoint that could go wrong. You know, so to be able to get them all in sync and hit at a respectable percentage. But, you know, that's why Kobe's Kobe. But I would imagine that if you charted those Clarkson shots off of the dribble where he's sidestepping or shooting a step back, his percentage has to be really, really low on those.
I would imagine it's single digits.
Yeah, it's frustrating to watch because, you know, those are good opportunities for him to just simply move the ball to the next guy. Even if it's not an assist, just let's keep the play alive and get a much better look than we're getting off of it. And so that's something that, you know, a lot of times we think about what a player can add to his game. But in this case, I think it's something that he should kind of take out of his diet.
And I think the other thing that he's doing, when I was looking at the numbers from that last 10 games of his rookie year, is that he's shooting a lot more threes this season than he was then. He was shooting 21.6% of his shots in those last 10 games of his rookie season were three-pointers, as compared to 28% this year. And so if you're shooting more threes, just by definition, you're going to have less opportunities to make plays on those shots, because when you're outside the arc, you aren't dribbling in and collapsing the defense. You aren't getting things moving around yourself, and it's not really creating as many chances for assists.
For sure, but the negative in Clarkson's case is that he's also converting those at a fairly low rate as well.
He made almost 1% more when he was a rookie, when the bigger knock on him was three-point shooting. I think people have kind of fallen away from criticizing his three-point shooting this year, much less so than they did during his rookie year, if I remember correctly.
And that's something that he's going to have to be able to do, one or the other, right? He's going to have to either be able to play make for others or knock down that shot, that outside shot consistently. You know, it's something that the average true shooting percentage in the NBA is 54.4% last I checked. And I haven't checked his numbers after he had a very good game yesterday, but he's probably around 51% right now. And there's a place in the NBA for guys who are fairly one-dimensional scorers, but for them to do it, they have to be able to do it on volume and with efficiency. There's two on our team right now, in Lou Williams and Nick Young, right, where they don't really bring a whole lot else to the table. But, you know, Young defends a little bit, but they're both, you know, 60% true shooting type of guys.
62.2 for Young, 60 for Lou Williams, and you were almost right on the money with Clarkson, who is at 51.2%.
Yeah, so it's something that if you're just going to be a scorer and you don't have anything that's really anything else about your game that you're bringing at an above average level. And that's not to say that Clarkson doesn't do anything else, but I don't think he's at a point where there's any other component of his game that you would say is league average or above. If you're just going to score, you got to be able to really up your efficiency in that. If not, you got to bring something else to the table.
Yeah, and the other thing that he could bring to the table, and he was, I feel like, a little bit more earlier this season than he has been recently, is defense. Have you noticed that? Do you feel like he's fallen off a little bit defensively?
I do. He had – it wasn't the Cavs game, but it was the game before against Philly. I actually thought, aside from like a disastrous stretch in the third quarter, it was the first time I'd watched him in a while and been like, okay, he's doing some good things on the defensive end. He started really strong in the preseason. I was really excited about it. And then at the beginning of the season, he was okay. And that's gradually tapered off as time has gone by, to the point where, you know, a few games ago, it was really not that much different than last year. So from watching him on tape, you know, and I try not to psychoanalyze these guys, but from watching him on tape, his focus level in a multitude of areas just hasn't been there, right? Where he will just fall asleep in a moment on either end of the court. And, you know, he's not able to execute the way that he was prior to that. So it makes me wonder if there's something going on with him. But again, I don't know him. I don't want to psychoanalyze him, but from seeing him on tape, everything kind of went back to the same place where it wasn't technique. It was focus.
I almost feel like part of that, without getting into mental state or any off-the-court stuff or whatever, I just feel like part of that is he's had to do more, I think, with the injuries that the Lakers have had on offense. And my best guess was just that as he was asked to do more offensively, he fell back into those bad habits of, okay, this is the end of the floor where I save a little bit of energy.
Yeah, no, that's a really good observation. That's probably a pretty good explanation.
Yeah, I mean, because otherwise, it's just, you know, it was encouraging in the preseason to see him coming out and really taking pride in it. And it was either him or Nick Young that almost after every game that Luke Walton was calling the best defender on the team. I think he was kind of alternating based on the matchup or whatever, who he was giving that praise to. But it seemed to really pump them up, and it seemed like everybody at the beginning of the year took a little bit more pride on defense than they have over the last 10 games. And I don't think that it's necessarily a coincidence that the Lakers have lost 9 of those last 10. And so I guess the last thing before we kind of start to wrap up here was, I mean, what do you feel like? Do you feel like the Lakers are getting better now? Are they coming out of it after they broke this losing streak? Do you feel like they did some things to improve, or did they just beat Philly?
No, I actually think it started in the Brooklyn game. They had lost their way a bit, and Luke Walton touched on this a bit in saying that they had lost their focus on getting better. And that's one thing that, you know, coaches, from being around a lot of coaches myself, a lot of them really focus on being process-based opposed to being results-based. And I think that they kind of got caught up in they were 10-10 and got caught up in the idea of, hey, you know, maybe we could be a playoff team. And when you start thinking about results of games, you can get away from the process of how you got those results in the first place. In the Brooklyn game, although it was a loss and it kind of got ugly toward the end, it was the first time that I'd seen them defend really well in a long time, and they really took pride and care in their defensive rotations for about three quarters. And it was something that night they just couldn't hit a shot. You know, they were creating a lot of open looks, but it was just one of those games. And you get about, you know, Pat Riley used to say you get about five of these a year where you just can't hit anything. And no matter what you do, you're going to lose that game. And for me, that was what that Brooklyn game was. But I saw positive signs of how they were playing, even if they didn't get the result with the basket, that really encouraged me. And then that carried over into Philly, where they got the win and they played very well defensively as well. And then, you know, it's hard to say they played well against on the defensive end against Cleveland, but Cleveland's the type of team that you can defend well, and they still end up with a buck 15 against.
Yeah, you have to grade on a curve a little bit, I think, against the defending champions.
For sure. And so I think, you know, kind of the consensus of Laker fans after the Cavs game was like, all right, you know, they competed, they played hard. You know, we don't like to admit that we, as Laker fans, we don't like to admit that there are moral victories, but I'm one of the few who will. That was a moral victory game.
Even Luke Walton has admitted this season that he believes in moral victory. I think moral victories are a thing for this team, and I think it goes back to what you were talking about and what he was talking about, that this season should be about improvement. It's not about the results.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a game where, you know, I don't think you could have asked for much more than what they were able to provide. And, you know, I didn't get the impression that Cleveland was necessarily playing at 100%, but teams like that, championship teams and championship contenders, they know how to pace themselves throughout an 82-game season. And against bad teams, they know how to give just enough effort to pull that out, you know. And I think LeBron had like 8 points in the last 2 minutes of the game, you know, and he just kind of went, okay, you know, this is what we need to do to win this game, and I'm going to exert the minimal amount of effort I need to do that. But
he just kind of went, oh, that was really cute. All right, I'm going to end this now.
Yeah, and you know what, that's going to happen, and there's nothing the Lakers can do about that. But I've seen three straight games from them that have encouraged me, that I think they've pulled out of that doldrum that they were in. And I think a lot of it was, you know, I think they were really discouraged by the injuries and the lack of continuity. I think that they had a built-in excuse for the losses that they had. And then that started breeding bad habits, because they were approaching games like, ah, well, you know, we're probably not going to win anyway, which is the total opposite mentality than they had earlier in the year.
And I'm usually the last guy. I hate it when people just chalk things up to effort and whatever. I think it's like a lot of the times it's just the laziest analysis. It's like, oh, okay, they lost, so they didn't try. But I think you're on to something. Within those last three games, even though they lost two of them, they did just seem to be playing harder than they had been. There was a lot more energy. I think Randall, especially over the most recent two, is just, he just will not stop running in transition. He just, the second the Lakers secure a rebound, he's trying to beat every single big down the floor. And I think that was a huge key to their win over Philadelphia.
Yeah, he's a guy that I think that he's a real bellwether for how the team's doing. I think in a lot of those games where, yeah, the energy level wasn't there, you know, energy level really wasn't there for Randall. But when he brings it, when he plays well, the Laker record is, I believe, is pretty good. And even in the games that they lose, it's a respectable loss, like it is against the Cavs. So he's a guy that I think is really he has a lot of say in terms of what version of the Lakers show up on any given night.
Would you call him a catalyst, or do we have to call him something else because of?
I think that's reserved. Yeah, I think that's like a retired number. I don't think he can wear that. But I think I do think he catalyzes the team in terms of energy level. I think he's the personality of this team. You know,
I agree with you. I think that he's, you know, if nothing else, all these Draymond Green comparisons are accurate, in that he seems to be kind of the spiritual leader of the team, or the emotional leader, I guess.
Yeah, and part of the problem with having a 22-year-old as that is that you're going to experience a degree of inconsistency in emotions from, you know, from a person that age. So,
and we've already given the caveat multiple times that we don't want to psychoanalyze things too much, but he's got a lot going on right now. He's about to have his first kid within the next couple of days. So that can, I think, that, you know, that gets all kinds of emotions running through you. So that could be something that was affecting him as well, possibly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what he brings to the table throughout the rest of the year, because I think that's really going to, you know, determine the direction of this team.
I agree with you. So based on what we just talked about, it looks like the Lakers are getting a little bit better over the last three games. I'm curious for your opinion. Are they closer to the team from the first 20 games or the last 10?
I think they're closer to the first 20. I think that, you know, again, I think health really discouraged them. But I think that there's a certain degree of fight amongst these young guys, especially, that I really like. And there's been a reemergence from Luol Deng that I think is, you know, it hasn't really shown up on wins and losses yet because of a confluence of other factors that we've discussed. But I think that he's really going to come into play, you know, as the season continues to progress. If this is who he, I think he's gotten his legs under him, and I think it's something that it's happened over enough games now where I'm starting to feel encouraged that, you know, this could be, you know, he could be turning over a new leaf for this year. But amongst the young guys, you know, Russell's health is going to be a big key, because while I think that Randall is the personality of the team, Russell is the most skilled of the, the young guys. And, you know, that there's only so much that heart and effort and energy can provide. And especially amongst that starting unit, he provides a degree of ball handling and shot making, or even the threat of shot making, that kind of makes it work on most nights. And with the level of uncertainty that there is with his knee, if he's not healthy, they're closer to the team over the last 10 games. But if he's able to play in a vast majority of these, you know, of the games throughout the rest of the year, I think they're a lot closer to the first 20. Because I think that between him, what Randall brings to the table, Nance, all of the young guys, I think they kind of come together to bring this really spirited, fun team that isn't going to win every night. But, you know, those first 10, heck, first 15 games, even when they lost, teams weren't able to shake them. You know, yeah. I think their first blowout was, even when they got blown out on the scoreboard against OKC in Oklahoma City, but that was like a 4-point game with 4 minutes left.
Yeah, they had
left.
Battled all the way back, and then OKC blew them out again.
Right. And so, you know, I think the first like true blowout of the season was the second time that they played Golden State. And I think that was Russell's second time that he missed a game, you know, and first time in the 12-game stretch that he missed. So, yeah, if they're healthy, if Russell can play and everybody stays intact, I think they're closer to the first 20.
Yeah, you touched on a lot of stuff there, but I think as far as Deng, you know, he was a giant minus for the most part to start the year. And if all of a sudden he is just a neutral or a plus, then that starting lineup ceiling ticks up significantly. And I also think that just Russell being in the lineup, like you said, not only does it give the team, it makes them feel like they have a chance, but I think schematically it actually gives them a chance, because I just think Randall has been asked to do way too much for the starters when Russell is out.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. And, you know, Randall is a superb playmaker in transition, but it's not as much in the half-court game. But where he really excels is when, you know, Russell will draw that second defender off of a pick and roll, and then he's able to move it to a rolling Randall, and then he's kind of got a 4-on-3 situation in front of him, and he's able to create out of that. So, you know, I do think that having that additional playmaker, like Randall's a good secondary playmaker, but when you're asking him to be the first guy, I think that's a lot harder for him.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think that was a big problem for them during that losing streak. So, you know, Coach, that's all I really had to talk about tonight. But before we go, I wanted to give you a chance, since I basically brought you on to pick your brain for our podcast. I wanted to let you plug your own actual podcast towards the end of this.
I appreciate that, Harrison, and thank you for having me on, man. Yeah, I just started up a Laker Film Room podcast with Darius Soriano from Form Blue and Gold. It's probably going to be a weekly podcast, and we're going to, you know, not so much react to the day-to-day of the Lakers, but we'll probably pick a couple of topics every week and, you know, really go deep dive into it. That's something that Darius and I are both kind of known for, is taking something and then really delving into it. So we just had our first episode this past Sunday, and where we really went in depth on Brandon Ingram and then just kind of the roster construction of the team. And then, so look out for us on iTunes at Laker Film Room Podcast.
Okay, that's great. And as a reminder, if you want to find this podcast, you can do so on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Today's Fast Break. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Use the promo code LOLAKERS to get a $20 rebate on your first ticketing purchase. Pete, again, I can't thank you enough for coming on today. You really helped us out in a pinch. Anthony, for everyone listening, Anthony should be back tomorrow, and we should have another special guest for you guys, and I will talk to you later.